the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, I'm not surprised that the Oscar news has been all over the American press today and yesterday, leading up to the event of the Academy Awards ceremony last night. I am somewhat surprised at the international news coverage. You're talking about the front page of newspapers in Frankfurt, Germany, in London, in the Pacific Rim. There is no doubt that America and American cinema, Hollywood as a symbol, is one of the major culture-shaping forces in our society. Today we're going to be talking about what the movies mean. And this is going to be a great conversation because it's going to allow us to talk about what role Hollywood plays in shaping America and what we learned last night about America just from the awards that were given or from the events that took place or the comments that were made. We are, as a nation, largely symbolized internationally by Hollywood. That might scare you to death. But Hollywood itself is also making a statement by not only the movies it makes, but the movies it awards, the movies it recognizes. A lot was learned last night. We're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. Some of you have just been itching for a place to have an intelligent Christian conversation about the meaning of Hollywood. This is for the opportunity for you to call. This is the day. We're going to discuss it head on. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to be back with a special guest who has real insight into Hollywood and its workings and the meaning of film. In the meantime, let me just tell you a little bit about what's going on in the world. And I'll tell you, one story really has my attention. I wrote about it overnight at my website at albertmohler.com. It's a story about, well, it could just be just politics in Great Britain, but it's a lot more than that. Michael Portillo is a well-known leader in the Conservative Party, a rather controversial figure. He wrote an article published in Sunday's edition of The Times, that's the most establishment of the London newspapers, in which he attacks the head of the Conservative Party, that's his own party, for being a sincere Christian believer. It's one of those things that is so bizarre, you have to read it a couple of times to make sure you're actually understanding what he's writing. Mr. Portillo is writing about David Cameron, the leader of the Conservative Party, and this is what he has to say. Let me just read from the first part of his article. He said, when last week David Cameron revealed that he hopes his daughter will go to a Church of England school, his aides rushed to say that he attends Sunday worship in Kensington not as a ploy to help her chances, but out of genuine religious conviction. Mr. Portillo wrote, I would be more reassured to hear that the Tory leader goes to church because that is what it takes to get a child into the best of state schools, not because he is a believer. Mr. Portillo would prefer Mr. Cameron to be a hypocrite than a true believer. His words are astounding, and for that reason, I think they do deserve attention on both sides of the Atlantic. Mr. Portillo, by the way, made a failed bid to be himself the leader of the Conservative Party, often known as the Tory Party. And, of course, it is now Mr. Cameron who, after just 4 years in Parliament, is ahead of that party. And it looks like Mr. Cameron is, of all things, a sincere religious believer, a sincere Christian, to speak most specifically. And as a sincere Christian, this scares Mr. Portillo to death. This is what he has to say. He says that he fears anyone who fears the judgment of God. He says, for instance, that he would prefer that his political leaders not be serious about religion. Now, he's also concerned about the current British Prime Minister, Tony Blair. He writes this, he is apparently serious about religion. Reportedly, he takes on holiday 12th century theological texts for poolside reading. A year ago, he told us that he prayed to God about his decision to join the American invasion of Iraq, and that since he is a believer, it is how God will judge his actions that most concerns him. Now, that scares Mr. Portillo. Now, again, what he's saying is that Mr. Portillo fears a man who fears the judgment of God. Well, let me tell you, I fear the one who does not fear the judgment of God. We often talk on this program about how certain cases, certain happenings, even certain articles or events can crystallize something taking place in the culture. Michael Portillo is no fringe character. He has been among the leading figures in the Conservative Party in Great Britain. He writes this long article, a very considerable article, in the Times of London, suggesting that his nation is now endangered by the fact that the current prime minister and the man who would become prime minister both appear to be sincere believers in God. That scares him to death. He says that anyone who believes in God is a dangerous man. He writes, and let me quote here, he says, "I worry because men of power who take instruction from unseen forces are essentially fanatics." Mr. Pertillo goes on to argue that Britain should hold to, well, these are his words, a gentle, wishy-washy, middle-of-the-road kind of faith. And when Britain's leaders hold to something more seriously Christian, the entire realm is endangered. Now, one of the most interesting things about this article, and by the way, a brilliant response to the article was offered by the former editor of the Times, Mr. William Rees-Mogg. But when you look at the article that was written by Michael Pertillo, you see that he's accusing Mr. Cameron and also Mr. Blair of being sincere. Now, just think about something with me. How long ago was it when your average voter, your average citizen would worry that the Christian claims made by a politician would be insincere? Well, that used to be the old worry, right? In the old political context, we worried that people were insincere, that they were just trying to present themselves as Christians when they really were not. Well, now Mr. Pertillo's logic is the obvious. It's the opposite, as a matter of fact. He argues that we should worry when the man is sincere. He's calling for insincerity. He's actually demanding hypocrisy. Now, this is Great Britain in the year 2007, but you just have to wonder, how long will it be before this same logic takes deeper root here? Because you already hear this from some figures in American politics and cultural life. You hear the fact that those who actually believe in God are dangerous. It's okay if you just have to give lip service. You know, well, we'll understand if you have to give kind of a public presentation of yourself as a Christian, but just reassure us in some way that this really doesn't mean anything to you. And that if you have to believe in God, it isn't a belief that matters. You'll find my article published overnight at albertmohler.com. That's Albert, M-O-H-L-E-R.com, with links to the articles by William Rees-Mogg and by Michael Pertillo. I think you'll find it interesting. I have to tell you, there is a little joke on me in the fact that I posted a photograph, an image in my article of Tony Blair at prayer. And Tony Blair at prayer in this article appears to be very deeply involved in his prayer life. And four characters down is William Jefferson Clinton, who presumably was then the president of the United States. You just never know sometimes what you're going to find on your own website. I'll simply leave it there. UCLA, the University of California, Los Angeles, has established a unique chair of law. The law school is going to feature the nation's first endowed professorship in sexual orientation law. Now, this is a worrying development, not because there would be an endowed chair dedicated to the study of an issue as obviously legally and culturally relevant as sexual orientation in the law, but that it will be funded by persons who clearly have an ideological agenda behind what they are doing. It's a gay male couple who is giving a $1 million plus gift to UCLA in order to establish this endowed academic chair. The cash gift, according to the LA Times, from John McDonald and Rob Wright, will help fund the research of a still-to-be-named professor at UCLA's law school's Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation Law and Public Policy. According to the paper, that five-year-old think tank investigates such topics as anti-homosexual discrimination, the impact of the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policies, and the demographics of same-sex couples who have adopted children. The bottom line of this particular news story is that you have $1 million plus being given to an institute that's already funded with $5 million plus that has an unabashedly pro-homosexual agenda orientation. Now, you have the kind of predictable statements here that it's supposed to be out objective research rather than an advocacy group. But at the same time, in the paper, the donors to this particular chair say, and I quote, "They clearly hope that such studies will aid the campaign for gay marriage and other gay rights issues." Well, again, you can't have it both ways. You can't say there's not to be an ideological purpose here and then say you hope the outcome of your gift will be increased public support for homosexual marriage and for other gay rights issues. Now, this is billed as a unique development, but I just want to tell you it's really not all that unique. This kind of issue, this kind of gift, this kind of ideological agenda is being played out in so many of these so-called research centers across American academia. You see, there's a certain cachet, there's a tremendous cultural value to being able to say that this think tank at the University of X has just released this study. It sounds academic. It doesn't sound ideological. Well, that's where, as intelligent Christians, you need to start asking some very serious questions. How do I know that what's coming out of this institute, think tank, or research center isn't ideologically driven? There's a pretty good chance that if it's being paid for people who tell you in advance what they hope the outcome will be, it's not objective science or research. The law has become the playground of ideologies. No better example than this development at UCLA. We'll be back to talk about Hollywood and its impact on America. We'd love to hear what you think about this, not just on the Academy Awards, but the whole movie scene. The phone number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
And the Oscar goes to Helen Mirren in The Glee.
Okay, now that's one I was hoping for, I'll just admit. I thought Helen Mirren's performance in The Queen was absolutely spectacular, and so I was one of those that was hoping that she would be honored in just the way she was. She, of course, also won a Golden Globe for her portrayal of Elizabeth I in a cable television movie. Remarkable year for a woman to play both Elizabeths and to win the top award as actress for both portrayals. A lot of folks last night went home empty-handed. A lot of folks went home last night with the coveted Oscar Awards. The Academy Awards presentation was last night. And according to the media reports, millions of Americans were watching. I don't know if you were watching or not, but let me tell you, the world's also watching us watching. The world is watching what Hollywood produces and what America is saying through its films. I'd love to know what you think about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We have with us on the line as our guest Jeffrey Overstreet, who's had more than a decade of experience as a film reviewer. He writes his own reviews at his website, lookingcloser.org. He's also a weekly columnist and critic at Christianity Today's movie website, written and reviewed movies from many other periodicals and magazines as well. Mr. Overstreet, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me just ask you a point-blank question. How important is Hollywood anyway?
Well, Hollywood is just one community. I mean, a large and powerful and influential one, but a large community of artists and entertainers. And since they have the most money and the most resources, their stories are the stories that get heard not only across the country but around the world over and over and over again. So it's very important that we be paying attention to what Hollywood is doing and that we listen to the stories that are being told there.
You know, one of the most interesting responses to the Academy Awards presentation is one I read in the L.A. Times, an article by Joe Queenan, who writes for the New York Times Book Review and several other periodicals. He says, look, the Oscars aren't even representative of Hollywood. Let me just read to you what he says here. He says, actually, the only humans who would make such an extravagant gesture, that's the Academy Awards, are the tiny group of mysterious voters who make up the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences year in, year out. This largely unidentified group of voters, many of them quite advanced in years, some presumably dead, persist in honoring actors, actresses, directors, and screenwriters for their superb work in films that are widely ignored and have almost nothing to do with the industry as it now impacts America. Is that fair?
Well, I can't say I'm an expert on the fine print about how you become a member of the Academy, but I know that most people who have done work in Hollywood, either as producers or actors, receive invitations to become a voting member of the Academy, and they are sent by mail DVDs of all the nominated films. And where we step into a gray area is wondering whether they've really actually watched those movies, because there are a lot to consider. And another thing that makes the Oscars particularly questionable is that the way that films qualify to be considered for awards is a rather complicated and frustrating process. I mean, when you consider that other countries around the world are only allowed to submit one film from their country for consideration, that means if the 10 best films of the year came out of France, only one of them would, you know, end up getting attention at the Academy Awards, and it might not even win. So things are heavily tipped in favor of American commercial filmmaking.
And it's supposedly, at least in the eyes of the Academy, the more artistic films. I mean, getting down to the needy-greedy, you're not talking about awarding Jack Black for Nacho Libre here, but Helen Mirren for The Queen.
Well, and that's a step in the right direction, I think, to really look at artistic films that are challenging us to think about things instead of challenging us to turn off our brains and swallow entertainment junk food. But I do think we have a long way to go as far as the Academy learning to recognize independent films. And the reason it's important that they learn to do that is that independent films are usually stories from particular artists who, and these artists have sacrificed so many of their own resources in order to get their story told. You end up with some of the most interesting, passionate stories out there, whereas most big-budget Hollywood films were designed by a committee who were sitting there thinking, okay, the audience wants to see this and this and this. What you end up with is not so much a great story, but a great product that has been cleverly marketed.
Yeah, that's a fascinating insight, Mr. Overstreet. And, you know, I'm immediately thinking of the fact that you've got all the interplay, everything down to the action figures given out at the local fast food restaurant, commercial tie-ins.
You could even see it with the Chronicles of Narnia movie. I mean, it did a fairly good job of representing the book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But in the book, the battle at the end only took up a couple of pages, and in the movie, and especially in the extended version now on DVD, it takes up about 20 minutes, and you can just tell somebody in that room was thinking, you know, we're going to get the teenage boys to come if we put in a whole lot of wild fantasy sword-clashing action. And sure, it was great to watch, but it didn't quite ring true with C.S. Lewis's story, which focused more on character development.
When you think of the Oscars last night, what were your surprises?
Wow, there were a lot of surprises. Some of them were disappointing. Some of them were exciting. One that I cared particularly about was the Best Cinematography Award. I saw a film called Children of Men that has been rather controversial among Christian film critics, but one thing that everybody agreed on was that it had groundbreaking cinematography. What they did with the cameras in that film set a new standard, and unfortunately, the award went to Pan's Labyrinth, which also had skillful, artful cinematography, but they're not going to be talking about that in 25 years the way they will Children of Men.
Now, that's a very interesting point, because Pan's Labyrinth walked away with more than one Oscar last night, and yet most people say it's going to be, a mediocre film at best at the box office.
Well, I agree with that, partly because it's imported to America, and so it probably won't do too well at the box office. Not a lot of people want to go and read subtitles. Unfortunately, we can't look at the box office to be a good thermometer, so to speak, or a good measure of how good a film is going to be, just like we can't look at what restaurants people eat at as a measure of what's nourishing. You
know? But it is a measure of cultural impact. I guess that's my concern.
Absolutely.
You think about the fact that the world sees our huge blockbuster movies, and I mean literally sees them, and their picture of America is somewhat drawn from that. Let me just ask you a question. What are people going to think about America knowing that The Departed, for instance, was Best Picture?
I think it depends on what they focus on with The Departed. The Departed was originally a Japanese film called Infernal Affairs that was focused on the moral choices of two opposing characters. One, a cop who goes undercover to try and bring down a gang lord, and he tries to go undercover without making any moral compromises himself. But in order to put on the disguise of a bad guy, sometimes he has to act like a bad guy. The other guy, one of the gangster's cronies, goes undercover as a cop, trying to mess with the police and find ways to help the gang lord escape. And he's rotten from the core. Now, The Departed took that morality story and enlarged it, so to speak, by building up the backstories on each character, and it made it much more complicated. You could watch The Departed and focus on the violence and enjoy that, focus on the foul language and enjoy that, or you could focus on the story and decide what it's saying about right and wrong, about the consequences of wicked actions. And that's what I focused on watching it, and I thought there were some good lessons in there about the complicated moral territory these characters are entering.
It's complicated moral territory, and I guess one of my questions is whether in the extremity of the way they set that movie up, it really led to some kind of conclusion that could be morally helpful. That's an interesting question in itself. Folks, to join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about what Hollywood means about America and what the Academy Awards mean about Hollywood. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, folks. First, a program note. Many of you are aware of the Discovery Channel documentary, The Lost Tomb of Jesus, that is to air on Sunday night, March 4. You've probably been seeing a lot of controversy about it, and there's going to be even more. We'll be talking about it on this program tomorrow. I'm talking about it tonight on Larry King Live, which is on CNN at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, repeated at midnight Eastern Time. You'll find it on the West Coast and throughout the nation at the appropriate and posted hours. But it's going to be a lively conversation tonight about that issue. And, again, I'll be on Larry King Live tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, to discuss that. And we will take it up on the program tomorrow. So as you're thinking about it, reading about it, talking about it, get ready to join the conversation tomorrow about the lost tomb of Jesus. Let me just set your minds at ease. Nothing for Christians to be worried about. Just one more barometer of where we are as a culture. To talk about Hollywood, the Academy Awards, and what this says about us today, give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. My guest today is Jeffrey Overstreet, who is a keen observer of the Hollywood and film scene, a columnist and critic at Christianity Today's movie website. Mr. Overstreet, I want to read to you a statement from Neil Gabler, I think another very keen observer of Hollywood. He said this: virtually from their inception, the movies have been America's primary popular art, the democratic art, as they were once called, managing to strike the American nerve continuously for decades. During the 1920s, nearly the entire population of the country attended the movies weekly, but even when attendance sank in the 1950s under the assault of television and the industry was virtually on life support, the movies still managed to occupy the center of American life. That's an insightful statement. You know, Mr. Overstreet, do the movies still capture the center of American life?
I think so, but I think that is an extension of something that's been going on since Jesus was speaking at the Sermon on the Mount and even before that. And here's what I'm talking about. People keep predicting the end of the cinema through the individualization of media, that pretty soon we'll all just be sitting at home on our couches watching DVDs and we won't go to the movies anymore. But art is a communal experience. We crave the experience of storytelling in a crowd so that we can share responses. We have that sort of affirmation that we all laugh at a lot of the same things. We all cry at a lot of the same things. It gives us that sense of community with people who are very different than us. And beyond that, it also gives us something to talk about, something, you know, by which we get to know our neighbors. I think water cooler talk, movies are probably the number one subject of discussion. You know, what did you see this weekend? What did you think of it? And I think that's where Christians have such a great opportunity at the movies, is we can go and see what somebody else in the world thinks about life, hear from a particular artist's experience, or in the case of Hollywood, a particular committee's opinions, and come away and discuss them with our neighbors. You know, unfortunately, I think Christians tend to be inclined toward merely complaining or protesting about other opinions, and that hinders, I think, our ability to have conversations, a good, healthy dialogue with our culture.
One of the movies you mentioned earlier, The Children of Men, it's considered by many people a disappointment compared to the book, but nonetheless, it is an amazing story, and one that has all kinds of worldview implications. You know, How many of today's movies really are as serious as The Children of Men in raising those kind of worldview issues?
Children of Men was an extremely serious film for a big-budget Hollywood production. We don't get many that look that intensely at the darkness in the world. The film got a lot of flack from Christians because of how much darkness it puts up on the screen, but I think it was exposing darkness as darkness. And I mean, in the book of Ephesians, we are told to have nothing to do with the unfruitful deeds of darkness. And I was told that a lot growing up in relation to movies. Don't have anything to do with the movies because they show you so much darkness. But there's more to that verse. It says, but rather expose the unfruitful deeds of darkness. That's Ephesians 5:11. Now, what that is saying appeals to artists. We don't want to just turn a blind eye to evil. We want to examine evil like we examine a disease, consider it, come to understand the consequences of wrongdoing. And I think Children of Men gives us a vivid picture of many of the evils in the world right now. And it inclines us to find hope in the fact that perhaps there's a miracle in the world. Perhaps there's a miracle child in the world by which we might be saved. So it's not very faithful to the book, but it's a compelling film.
This is a compelling issue. And lots of folks had written me prior to the Academy Awards with specific questions about Hollywood and some suggestions about why Hollywood's important. I'd love to hear from you now. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. My guest has been Jeffrey Overstreet of Christianity Today's movie website. He's also the author of the book, Through a Screen Darkly. Mr. Overstreet, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with your calls. I'm Albert Bowler. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. You know, it is sometimes difficult to think about how to have a truly intelligent conversation, Christian conversation, about Hollywood. It's hard to know at times how much credence to give it, how much importance to ascribe to it. I'll just tell you right straightforwardly that I don't see many movies. I see some. I see more on DVD after they come out than before because I don't have time. I mean, I just don't have the lifestyle that allows me to go and see all these. So I look at the movies that were nominated for Best Picture, and I've seen, one of them, The Queen. And it was my favorite, probably because it was the only one I saw. But nonetheless, it was a movie I really wanted to see, and I'm glad I did. It was an outstanding acting performance about something that I think is, again, very, very interesting. When taking a look at the culture, and in that case, the response of Britain to the death of Princess Diana, the new cult of celebrity and all the rest, and the Queen representing a very different generation, her response to it. I'll tell you what my favorite moment was last night at the Oscars, and that was nothing to do with cinematography per se, but rather with the fact that a Lifetime Achievement Award was given to Ennio Morricone, who has written some of the most fantastic music of the 20th century. You know so many of his songs, you will recognize the background to them, all the way from the spaghetti westerns that he did back in the 60s and 70s to some of the more incredible films, such as The Mission. Some of the music he wrote for the soundtrack, the theme songs and the score to, say, the movie The Mission is just incredible. It's some of those beautiful music I have with me. It's on my iPod, and I listen to his soundtracks a great deal. By the way, I would also recommend the soundtracks for the movies coming out this year, including The Queen by Alexander Desplat, a very, very good soundtrack as well. Sometimes Hollywood attracts a lot of our attention because we know that our neighbors are going to see these films, even if we are not. We know that our children are being told about these films, whether we're taking them to them or not. Just think back to the phenomenon of the 1970s, the 1980s with the Godfather movies. You had kids walking around mimicking characters, whether they seen the movie or not. It began to have a filter down effect, talking to each other like gangsters. And that's just a reminder to us that Hollywood does have a filter down impact. Even when we don't see the movies, our neighbors are. Let's go to Orlando, Florida, where Bob's on the line. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, my concern is, as a Christian, should we be supporting Hollywood on the one hand, and on the other, exposing ourselves to what Hollywood is throwing out at us? And I'm just not sure that's a good witness, even to our unsaved neighbors.
Okay, now play that out just a little bit for me, Bob. You're just making a blanket statement about the movies, period?
Well, yeah, I mean, Hollywood doesn't throw that much out that's good, and every time I go, I'm just very disappointed. So I don't go very often, and I'm just not sure we should be supporting. I'm not sure it's a good witness, and I think it's a compromise. And
I want to think this through with you. How different would that be than, for instance, what Hollywood does with television?
Well, the same thing. I had to turn the TV off. Finally, I just finally realized that there was nothing there that was edifying, and it just, I use that time for things that are more edifying, reading or watching Christian, videos or teaching, things like that.
Well, I can't argue with the superiority of reading to watching anything on television or the movies. I'll give you that, Bob, hands down. I will say that I think we need to think again of that trickle-down effect. Whether we're seeing the movies or not, the culture around us is talking about them. I think we have to be at least very sensitive and aware of the fact that many of the stories our neighbors know, and many of the characters they emulate, many of the symbols that they pick up are coming from Hollywood. And, you know, Bob, I'll tell you this. I certainly don't recommend going to see The Filth. I don't recommend going to see The Garbage. And, frankly, I don't really even care whether you go to see the movies or not. I do think we have to take Hollywood seriously, though, in terms of the impact on our culture. And I'll also say I think there are some things out there that are worth seeing. And I try to draw attention to those that are worth seeing. I'll admit it's a small number. But nonetheless, I think there's some stuff out there that that deserves our attention. Folks, when you think about Hollywood, we usually do think of the films. But let's remember that the entire entertainment industry really comes together in that nexus, especially television and cinematography there in Southern California. And by the way, if you just do a demographic and sociological kind of study, you'll discover that there are some real alliances, parallels, similarities politically and culturally between the two coasts, between, say, the Northeast and the California coast. And the rest of America is kind of flyover districts, and in fact, they sometimes call it that. In other words, the cultural elites think that what matters is what happens on the East Coast or the West Coast. The rest of the country, we're just the drones that buy the stuff, consume the stuff, and watch the stuff. That's one of the reasons why, again, what you see at the Oscars and the Academy Awards is not necessarily what America is saying. It's one of the reasons I brought up box office. And I know if you're a real purist about cinematography, you don't care about the box office. But let's face it, Hollywood cares because that's their bread and butter. The interesting question is, when movies that are more elevated, when movies that are more noble, when movies sometimes even with explicitly Christian themes do so well, and so many of those with dark and sinister and nihilistic themes do so poorly, why does Hollywood persist in making movies that America doesn't like? It has to be explained at least in part by an ideological commitment. It has to be explained at least in part by the fact that some of the people there are driven by a mission. You know, just, well, I guess it's been about a year ago now, we had a Hollywood insider in on this program who mentioned how various ideological strands get written in all of these things. Mr. Overstreet mentioned that many of these Hollywood films are really written by committee, or it's a committee that decides everything from the merchandising and the plot and the themes and all the rest and puts it all together. Well, what if on that committee are persons who say, we want to throw in the spice of, say, homosexual advocacy here. Let's put in a gay couple in a very positive light. When someone over here says, let's do this. Let's make sure that there are disabled persons in the film. Let's come over here. In other words, there are all kinds of things that are subtle and not all of them bad in terms of having, for instance, a person with disabilities in the movie. But when it comes to the moral and cultural issues, sometimes there's a real hard ideological edge. By the way, one of the interesting things going on in Hollywood right now is the merchandising that comes with product placement. You know, let's get this particular soda or soft drink in the hand of the actress and not another. I'll be right back with some final thoughts, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, because it is so important, I want to give you a heads up on this Lost Tomb of Jesus issue. I'm going to be on Larry King tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Time debating this with other panelists. Also on the program tonight will be James Cameron, the producer and director of The Titanic, who is also the executive producer of this new program special, the documentary that's going to be on the Discovery Channel on March the 4th on Sunday. Also, Simca Jacobovici, who is a Jewish director who is on there, and it has a great deal to do with this. Simca is no newcomer to these particular claims that you have the discovery here, the discovery there. Supposedly, Mr. Cameron said that Mr. Josipovich has added together, connecting all the dots in order to put together the story that this is the lost tomb of Jesus. Let me just tell you, don't worry about it. Now, I'm going to talk about it tonight on Larry King Live. We're going to talk about it on this program tomorrow. It's going to get a lot of airtime. It's going to get a lot of publicity. But just remember, this time of the year, you can almost count on some major documentary, some major magazine cover story, some major cultural development that's supposed to cast doubt on the veracity of the biblical accounts of Jesus Christ. And let me tell you, there is no DNA. You're going to be hearing about the lost tomb of Jesus, you know, the fact that they submitted these human remains to DNA tests. There is no DNA of Mary. There is no DNA of Jesus. This is just an attempt to add scientific credibility to a very, very spurious and sensationalistic claim. Let's remember, though, that the Christian truth claim does come down to the fact that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead. The bodily resurrection and the bodily ascension are absolutely essential to Christian truth. If it ever could be proved that those things did not happen, then Christianity would fall. As the Apostle Paul said, if Christ is not raised from the dead, then we are of all men most to be pitied, for we are still dead in our trespasses and sins. But just remember this, there is no such evidence that could ever be produced. There is no way. We don't have the DNA of Jesus. We don't have anything like what is insinuated in this program. So when you see the efforts of Mr. Cameron and Mr. Jacobovich to put this together, you'll be reminded of the fact that that this is just one more attempt. By the way, over 10 years ago, the BBC put together a very similar documentary with basically the same claims. The Israeli professor who was the chief archaeologist at this site, Professor Kloner, he himself says there's really nothing to this. Extreme skepticism coming from the major Jewish archaeologists and Israeli archaeologists on this claim. Just another reminder that we have to be on our feet. And folks, remember, a lot of folks are going to be talking about this. You need to be ready to give a Christian answer. That's why we're going to talk about it tomorrow on the Albert Mueller Program. Larry King Live tonight, tomorrow on the Albert Mueller Program. We'll take this on. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.